session number 16718, Major Wilfred White, Reel 12.
Mr. White, Reel 12. We were discussing the discipline in the hospital.
Yeah, well, there was an incident where in the hospital itself, the nurses' quarters, the sleeping quarters, were in the centre of the surround of tents with a 12-foot-high brick wall around it with broken glass in the top. And as a party of us, we hadn't been far, none of us could go far, but we'd been down to some place that sold beer, cigarettes and that, canteen. And we're walking back, and one of the Highlanders took the hat of another Highlander, different regiment, of course, and threw it over the top of the compound. And said, "Now what are you going to do?" So he says, "I'm going to get the cap back." And he was, just as he was trying to circumnavigate the broken glass on the top, the military police arrived round the corner. They wouldn't believe that he was just trying to get his cap, see. So he and one or two others were marched away to have their fortunes read. And they looked after you from a medical point of view, and you were obviously very precious, but there was no ruddy nonsense. Because we all had a bit of relief to hospital, honestly. Well, you couldn't hear the guns. So that went on.
Who staffed the hospital?
The Queen Alexandra Nursing, I think they were. But and the men seemed to be regular officers. But a lot of the nurses. Now, I don't know if the Queen Alexandra nurses were actually in the army. That were army personnel, I believe. But they were wonderful. Oh, man. And, of course, you know, we tried all sorts of dodges to get a date with them. But I must admit, I was one of the millions unlucky. Yes.
There must have been some tragic sights that you saw there.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. The amputees were... one or two disfigured. But... the usual sort of... things I suppose you'd see in any hospital, but... it didn't make it any better that there were soldiers, you know, chap losing his arm. Because in those days you didn't know what the outcome was going to be. You had visions of him selling matches from his little tray again, you know.
How long were you in hospital?
From, I'll have to work it out, from November the 1st, 2nd until November, December. January. Three months plus, because the last month I was shipped up to Syria, trained up by train, and I had a fortnight there. Well, not very long at all, and they just cut the plaster off, filled the pass it and go on 3 months, and honestly, it did it, pong. And although it was red, it had healed over. And of course, bathing normally as I could then. I said, right, you'll be examined by the doctor tomorrow and you'll be off. And as I was, so it happened. He says, can you bend your knee? Can you stretch? I said, yes. He says, well, you're fit. Where do you go back to? And I don't know. I said, Blighty or something like that, you know, in joking. But I went back the night of the LI in Colonel Walks.
There was no question of going to the base depot first.
Oh, yes. That was it. The 9th DLI base depot, I beg your pardon.
Some people did find it a problem with being away for too long, getting back to the battalion.
Well, I can well imagine that it could have been difficult, because I'd been sent up to Syria. I had no idea where my battalion was. That was the first point. I later had no idea how I was going to get back to base depot, where I knew I'd have to go. And I asked, I said, well, how do I get back? I said, well, hitchhike. Get a lift, there's plenty of transport going down from Syria, Palestine, down in the Delta. And that's virtually what I did. I travelled, hitchhiked during the day, and then went into any army establishment that was near where I stopped, you know, the night, and either got a bed or didn't get a bed and slept in the mess, you know, with a chair, but I got a meal and that.
But they fed you?
Oh, they fed me as I was going along, yes. But I wasn't with anybody, you know what I mean? I wasn't, this is the 9th DLI marching through. I just, obviously was a soldier on the, going back to his unit. And it worked beautifully, really. There's never any, I can't remember any trouble. And there I got back to Colonel Vaux. Oh, he says, and he told me about the 9th. Evidently there'd been a storm in around the Tobruk area, and there was some enemy action as well, and it meant that there was a blockage in the fact that the flow of ammunition, because Tobruk was a big port, you know, loading and unloading in this operation, had got behind schedule. So the 151 Brigade was put on the ground at Benina, around the Benghazi area, and its transport was all taken away. It might have been for the whole division, I'm not sure. And we were transporting the lorry loads of material from wherever, you know, certainly from Tobruk up to the Mouth Line front. And we were there quite a, that was the form, that was what was taking place when I arrived back on the scene.
And this, you joined them at Benina then?
Yes. And, well, at that stage, Teddy Worrell was there, still with the battalion. Andrew Clark and Bill Robinson were still with the battalion. I'd never had time to get to know anybody else anyway, you know. And some of the NCOs in my platoon were still there.
Had you lost all of your platoon when you got to them?
Oh, yes.
You got to the same platoon, did you?
I got the same platoon.
And some were missing?
Oh, yes. And,
same sergeant?
Yes, fortunately. His time hadn't come, as it were. and mostly the same NCOs.
What were you doing at Benina?
Well, they were training and resting and cliff climbing, because they knew that the next attack, they had this tremendous fortification to overcome. They knew that the 50 Div had been earmarked for the breakthrough of the Merritt line, and hence cliff climbing to, you know, work up strength and techniques of getting out of a deep wadi. Tell you about the position in a moment. And
did you get into Benghazi, which was nearby?
No. The time at Benina, as ever in my history, was terminated within a week of me getting there, and we were on that en route for the Merritt Line area. There was just one time, I forget who told me, but we'd had some pamphlets sent out from the War Office on how to tackle a fort. In those days, there was a battle drill for every infantry maneuver. You're doing it to numbers, you know, which as a base has had a lot to be said for it. But there was this, the battle drill to neutralize an enemy fort. And Teddy again gave me the job of mastering it so I could attack a fort, obviously. And it was quite a performance. I got 6 extra sappers attached to me. 2 had Bangalore torpedoes. And they were just like drain pipes filled with explosive. I had to manoeuvre these through the wire and across the mines, and at the appropriate message they fired them, blew up the wire and created a gap, and some other sappers dashed in with pole charges, just like the hod carriers, you know, the thing they carried, but the top was swiveled and covered with explosives. So they dashed in and rested them against the walls or the doors of the fort and set the fuse off, and bang, a great big hole. And meanwhile, the infantry officer was there with these lads who charged through the gap in the wire and charged through the hole, and bingo, he captured a fort. Now, what could be easier than that? But I had 2 trials with them, and I can't remember what happened. But that's another story, really. So we knew broadly what had to happen. Tunisia is in fact shaped like a typical rectangle. And you've got the sea on this side, the sea on that side. And on this side, you've got impassable hills. Across the bottom, you've got this wadi on which the French had built a fortified line, incorporating the wadi into the defensive line. Great big forts with little forts spreading out from them. Masses of wire, masses of mines on that side of the wadi, and masses of mines on the other side of the wadi approaching the wadi itself. And of course a coordinated fire plan where every bit of cover was taped. They had guns sighted covering all the approaches to it. They had everything excepting battleships floating up and down the wadi.
Was there an anti-tank ditch with it as well?
That's right. The anti-tank ditch being man-made. So you had the wadi, which undoubtedly had been strengthened in various ways. Lines of fire straightened out. then he came out of the ward into the anti-tank ditch, which was a massive thing. And you had these massive forts, you know, with the guns trained on all these obstacles. And the approach to the wadi was hairy too, you know. And our 69th Brigade, to mention but a few, and the East Yorks, the Coldstream Guards as well, Guards Brigade, had been spending the time while we were climbing the hillsides outside of Benghazi and that, pushing in their outposts from the sort of the south side of the wadi to give us a start point for our attack. But we were going to sweep through and neutralize the forts. And, it was a tricky maneuver to get into position, because the Alamein approach was fairly flat, you know, and you could put one lot over here and quite easy have the other lot over there, but this front was so narrow that you sort of, whether you liked it or not, you were mixing up for part of the time, not all the time obviously, but for part of the time, you know, you're mixing up with, and again with the Australians and New Zealanders and Highlanders and what have you. Although no, it didn't say any Highlanders on this one.
Was it ridged in the approach? Did you have a hill to go up or a ridge to?
The dominant feature was this wadi, about 80 yards wide on our front. Water in the bottom.
How deep would the wadi itself be?
The wadi itself would be certainly 40 or 50 feet deep, because we know you had to form a special pyramid to get out of it. But the water, you know, yes, it got round the knees in places, but only for a pace or two. Flowing fairly quickly, though. And the fort was called Theba West. It was a massive brute. And after it took us, you know, it was two or three days to get formed up so we could have a crack at it. But the trouble was that wherever we went, we were under fire, continuous fire. I mean, once you got near enough to form up, you were under fire. And they might not have had as many guns as we had at Alamein, but they obviously had a lot of ammunition. And they obviously were going to fire all the ammunition, because I firmly believe that they knew it, that they were finished, you know, in Africa. But by Joe, they weren't going to give in.
So their observation, you were continually in their observation?
That's right.
Wherever you went?
That's right. And
What was the actual attack plan as it
as it turned
unfolded?
Out, the first part of the plan was to roll their outposts back onto the fort side of the wadi, and then the 151 Brigade attacked. I think the 8th Battalion was on our right again and took Theba Est, was their fort. And we were on the left to take Theba West. Now, my notes will tell you, if I've made them, you know, to just to switch them round. And the 6th Battalion were in reserve on the our side of the Wadi, to be whatever happened. And I went out on patrol the night before the attack, and I still do identify the mines, the location of them, and what sort they were.
This would be on your side of the Wadi. The
on our side of the Wadi, that's right. And I was out all night. I got to the Wadi edge, and then I started hitting mines. Anti-tank mines, you know, thankfully. And I got no signal at all on S mines, the anti-personnel mines. I didn't run across them. So
so you did this on hands and knees job, was this?
Near enough, yes.
And were you poking with a bayonet?
With a bayonet, yes. Till you hit something, which... And then you had to... You had to have a look at it very carefully. You'll readily know that. As I say, we found the anti-tank mine was there, but there was an approach to that anti-tank mine where we appeared to be relatively free of anti-personnel mines and anti-tank mines. And that's what I reported back. And Teddy, of course, said, "Did you get into the Wadi?" I said, "No." He says, "Well, that's a pity. We want to know what the bed of the Wadi's like." I said, well, I can't remember what I said. I just hadn't been there. But I'd seen the water flowing. I said, "The water's there and flowing." So, the attack started, and in the plan of the attack was that I think it was Charlie Company had to lead on first, followed by our, and their job was to knock out some smaller opposition, smaller forts, presumably, and strong points. And our company had to follow them over the Wadi, and then when we got on the far side, swing right and attack the fort from the right, well, be their right flank, and from behind. Again, sounds admirable. The other company were in reserve, really. So, and the big thing was we had a thing called Scorpion tanks. It was either two or four, to make two tracks through the minefields. Again, for to get the follow-up tanks through, to get our tanks through at the... Porsche. And so at whatever the time was, our attack started. I mean, the forming up area had been so shelled constantly, you know, really close stuff. Miraculously, nobody, the only people who got hit were the sappers who were going to blow the fort up for us, you know, to get at the... But those poor souls, I gather, I think they went out with their truck and all the Bangalore torpedoes. They just disappeared. And but I can't remember anybody else. And so off we went. Teddy was leading the attack, and I was the platoon behind him. So off we went, and my men were in a double file within the confines of the scorpions. These were tanks that had flails on the front. And, you know, as they've gone forward, boom, they hit a mine. And they weren't hitting a lot of mines, but they were hitting. And again, the sappers were pinning out the gaps. And we got to we went going up a slope. We got to, not a big one, we got to the sort of the crest of the slope, looking down into the wadi, and Teddy got hit. Got a bullet through the fleshy part of his breast. Very, very lucky where it went. So we got him patched up, and I said, "Are you going back?" He said, "No fear. I'm not missing this." In a regular officer, you see. And he says, "Come on, we've got to cross the wadi and I'll need your help." So having passed the word back about him being hit to the company sergeant major, because I knew he'd know better than me what to, who to tell. And we went down into the wadi, and of course the small arms fire started getting very significant then from the forts and the opposition on the other side. And we went across the wadi, water and all, at a fair lick. And when he came to the far side of the wadi, we all, he had to form a pyramid. And it went like clockwork. Surprisingly, it went well. And
well, this was the pyramid where you hold your hands and someone puts the foot in and you go to the next one.
So you got five at the bottom, which becomes four, and then three, and then if you get that far, you're straight over the top.
Had you rehearsed this at all?
Well, we'd been climbing rocks, cliffs. I hadn't rehearsed it because I wasn't there. But they'd obviously been rehearsed things like this, you see, to climb out of a wadi without ladders. Because our step ladders had been on the trucks with the explosives, you know, the sappers had. And lifting Teddy out, of course, he was at least 15 stone then. Big, tough fella. But he came out and, poor blight, and he didn't even whimper. So we got out of the wadi, then we had to get out of the anti-tank ditch, and then we met...
Was it a similar process with the anti-tank ditch?
Yes, we had it, yes, but not so high. You know, we're doing 12 foot on the anti-tank ditch and 40 on the wadi. We got Teddy to the top, and then there was this wire which was sort of the barrier to the fort itself. So the corporal went to cut the wire, and we took cover behind some rocks and a tree, and we were firing at the fort and anything we could see, making a noise. He snipped the wire. He says, "The wire's cut, sir." And then Teddy said, "Come on." And I went, and I had about a section of men behind me. And we dropped into the communication trench, which they had running from the main fort to the smaller outposts, you see, for so that they could have this maneuverability, you see, for counterattacking and that sort of thing. And we went up the trench together. Uh, had to throw one or two grenades at them. And suddenly there was a... Oh, yes, Teddy had put some the Bren guns on the top of this trench, which were firing into the fort. And suddenly we found a party had surrendered. And then as we were going, we got them back out of the way. As we were going along, we came across some big, heavy steel doors, about twice the width of that one there, built into the side of the communication trench. And that was the official entrance to the fort.